Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And first and foremost, hope everyone is good. Hope everyone is safe, social distancing, washing the hands. I mean, we all know the drill, but sincerely, hope everyone is doing as well as they possibly can. And I imagine, like myself, a lot of people are drinking a little bit more. Not crazy excess, but, you know, maybe you have a glass on a Tuesday because you don't normally. You're not going anywhere and you're not driving. And a couple of things I want to talk about before my interview, and it is with Stéphane Vivier. He's from France, makes wine in California, and makes wine with one of the most famous people in the history of wine, or maybe history is too strong, but certainly one of the most prominent winemakers in Burgundy, Aubert de Vilaine from Domaine Romanconti. And he's got a winery here in, or not here, in California, called High de Vilaine, and the winemaker is Stéphane Vivier. Now, Stéphane also makes his own wine, which we talk about a bunch in this podcast, from Sonoma Coast, from the Petaluma Gap, which is just a really cool area in Sonoma. It's one of the coldest places, if not the coldest place in Sonoma, where you see a lot of wine being made. I'd have to go back and look at my old textbooks just to make sure there wasn't some other appellation that is warmer. Now, that is key because you want that coolness because it gets the freshness, the acidity, so you don't get big, flabby Pinot Noir, and also longer time for the grapes to hang on the vines, which can help to ripen them and to get more diverse flavors. But you'll hear all about that in the podcast. The question I'm curious about is have your wine buying habits, have they changed? Now, for a lot of people listening, maybe you can't buy as much wine. You're out of work and wine is a luxury. I totally get that. For myself, I'm lucky enough that I can still work with my normal job with TSN Radio. You know, you throw in, I'm not spending much money and I don't have children. I can still kind of spend the same amount on wine, if not a little bit more. And actually, I am spending a little more on wine because I've decided I'm not going to the LCBO anymore. Now, let me first say, this is not a political or any sort of attack at the LCBO. I'm fine with the LCBO being open. I understand the idea that, you know, a lot of people that are suffering from alcoholism, to suddenly get rid of all alcohol can have very negative medical impacts. I think we talked about this, or I talked about it on the last one. So I'm fine with it. But the reason I'm not going is I'm just going to support a lot of people that you've heard on the pod, people you may hear on the pod. So I'm buying from consignment companies. I'm buying from wineries. And the great thing right now is all these great wineries, they're now delivering for free. Usually you have to get a case, which goes to part of it. For a lot of people, maybe you don't have the space for a case of wine to keep it stored away. And, you know, maybe you don't have the money to buy an entire case of wine. And, you know, I totally get that as well. But now is a great time because not just consignment companies, wineries, as I said, they're all offering free delivery on cases of 12 or more. So that's what I'm doing. I got a case of Henry Appellum, and they can do a mixed case. So I got some of their inexpensive Chardonnay and Rieslings and a couple bottles of their Reserve Riesling and a couple bottles of their Reserve Pinot Noir. I mean, it's still worked out to under $20 per bottle. It's probably about $17 per bottle, which is, you know, I'm lucky enough I can do that range. It also helps I don't spend much money on anything else. And then as for consignment companies, I'm going to be giving a lot of love to a couple. One, Barrel Select, which is actually a part of this interview. So I use them, wineonline.ca. I interviewed Sam Fritz Tate, and they got a crazy selection. And they do a good job as well of dividing to under $25 and things like that. I'm not here to push you one way or another. If you've got a consignment company you like, maybe use it more now. They can use your help. That's basically the point. I should have started there. They can use your help more now than ever because consignment companies and wineries to an extent as well, absolutely, they rely on restaurants. They rely on the Buy the Glass program. That's where you make most of your money because you can go through many, many bottles in the course of a night with if your wines are featured at a restaurant on the Buy the Glass menu. You just You get more volume. And that's where consignment companies and wineries make a lot of money. So they're not making that anymore. So I am going to support those ones a lot more. So that's why I'm not going to the LCBO. It's nothing against the LCBO. It's more about trying to help out local business, local farmers, all that kind of stuff. And speaking of Barrel Select, I'll be doing a couple interviews in the next little while with some of their winemakers. And for me, it's great because it's more content. And I wish it could be face-to-face. A lot of them are going to be Skype. And I think the quality is pretty good, at least for my ability to use Skype. I also feel all of us, we've all lowered the bar on what we care about when it comes to audio and video, especially if you watch the news and everyone, every news expert there at home with the, you know, their stupid fireplace or bookshelf in the background. Oh, look at all the expensive things I have and all the impressive books that I've lied about that I've never actually read. But, you know, you see a copy of Ulysses, you assume, oh, he must have read that book. What a smart guy or gal that is. As for Barrel Select, I mentioned it a couple times. They have two wines that Stefan Vivier, the winemaker I'm going to interview, we talk about his 2018 Chardonnay and his 2016 Pinot Noir. The Chard goes for $65 a bottle. The Pinot goes for $64. But if you order this from Barrel Select, and you can find Barrel Select, just type them in Google. You'll find them in a second. They're based here in Toronto. If you order from them and use the phrase, "because I said so," so B-E and then C-A-U-Z. But I don't care. I don't think it matters if you misspell it or something. They'll figure it out. Jeff and Don will figure it out. You will save $10. So that Chard is not $65. It's now $55 a bottle. The Pinot, instead of $64, it's now $54. Look at me. I did math. All you got to do is say, or when you email the order, "because Matt said so." I think I said before, "because I said so." That's me being a dummy. So yes, the phrase, "because Matt said so." And if you do that, you will save $10 per bottle on these wines. And $65 at $64, it's not cheap. But these are hand-picked from really good sites by a really good winemaker that puts in the effort, puts in the attention into making wines. And he's been making wine for a long time, as you learn. Like, these are really good expressions of California, Sonoma Coast, specifically Sonoma Coast Chard and Pinot. So just use the phrase, "because Matt said so." And as for Barrel Select, if you're in the GTA area, it is free delivery. Now, outside the city, yeah, it's going to be, I believe, $15. Think about this. If you're in Toronto and you go to Ajax, you know, you can get the cheapest, most ride-sharing Uber, and it's going to cost you more than $15 for that ride. So free delivery in the GTA, outside the GTA, $15. Jeff and Don, the owners of Barrel Select, are friends of mine. I've known them for ages, and I've ordered more wine from them than anyone else. Support them, or as I said, wineonline.ca, I'll be giving business to. And if you have someone else, do it. And if you're thinking about ordering wine from a winery, absolutely do it. And now is a great time. Like, you know, you're going to get to try some great stuff. And I imagine some of these wineries, they might have wines that normally sell out, and maybe they've got more in. I don't know. I mean, Henry Pelham, certainly not. Some of their Chards I wanted to get were already sold out. But and it's not even just Niagara. Like, I'm looking at the list here, and I see, like, Kloss and Chase, and I'm seeing a lot of other places. Yeah, there's Kentihi, and I'm sure I mispronounced that, and Lighthall Vineyards. You know, so there is a lot of good stuff from Prince Edward County as well. It's not just about Niagara. No matter where you are, oh, there's Taws. I mean, Suan Staff, Stratus, Stanners. I mean, there's tons all over the place. A lot of good wineries. Support them if you can, if you have the money and the space. It's free delivery for a case. By the way, I'm not getting any kickbacks for any of this. It'd be nice if I was. You know, I've gotten the odd free bottle of wine. That's more than enough for me. So that's enough me yammering. Again, hope everyone is good and safe and enjoying good wine and just doing whatever you can to get through this unprecedented time. So without further ado, a really nice conversation just about this man's journey, his philosophy, and also he's from France. He was skeptical coming to California, and he admits it. Here is Stefan Vivier.
The title is clunky, But the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And today, from California, from Sonoma, Stéphane Vivier, winemaker, wine owner, joining me here. Stéphane, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Matt. Hello, everyone from Sonoma, California. My name is Stéphane Vivier, and I'm with Vivier Wines.
Yeah. And there's a lot I want to get into. And also, I'm going to be doing a bunch of these interviews with wineries that are represented by the consignment company Barrel Select here in Toronto. They're one of my favorites. I bought a lot of cool climate Pinot and Chard from them in the past. So I'm excited to talk to you and about your wines and the ones that will be featured here. But I want to first start with this. How are you doing? How is coronavirus affecting you and the wine business down in California?
Well, we're doing as well as can be in due to the circumstance. We of course are confined at home. However, our business, the wine business, been deemed as essentials, quote and unquote, and so we're still working in the vineyards, and nature is not slowing down for us when everything else has slowed down or stopped. So we're still going in the vineyards, and we're taking all precautions out there to be safe and to take our distance. And of course, the winery are also open. And so we are rotating our staff. We're trying to, I spent my last few weeks writing some new protocols for all my teams at wineries so that we can work safely. And one of the big head scratcher for us is bottling. And so we decided to bottle a lot slower so that we can have distance in between people. And we're trying to gather some masks so that people can be there safely with gloves and all we need to be as safe as possible. It is a really eerie time here in wine country, because we're a little bit out of the fray, out of the city, and so it's a lot easier to take your distance here in wine country. And we pretty much in the middle of nowhere. I live in Sonoma. There's only almost 5,000 people here, so it's a small community. So we're being very careful and supporting each other. But I understand it's a lot more difficult in big centers, big cities, than it is here in the country.
Yeah. Oh no. Certainly, I'm in Toronto, so the largest in Canada, and it is certainly different here than when I go for a drive out into the country. I guess in some ways, you know, you guys were prepared for this, wineries, because at least in the winery, cleanliness and things being sterile is sort of part of your business.
It's a huge part of our business. Believe me, we're cleaning and sanitizing more than we actually move the wine around. So it's part of our life. It's been part of our life for a long, long time. Actually, as a standard protocol in sanitizing small equipment at wineries, we use actually 180, 190 proof alcohol that comes from the beginning of the distillation. So things that we cannot, that the distiller cannot use for brandy, they keep it for us to sanitize our equipment. So we all have a spray attached to our belt, and we're spraying everything we touch, everything around us. So we've been prepared, and it's been actually fairly easy to get the team on task to protect us against coronavirus.
So let's. There's a lot I want to talk about yourself and about the wines, but let's start. We did a little face to face before we started this interview, and you were showing me your 2018 Sonoma Coast Chardonnay. And I should tell people before you go over just your process of making Chardonnay that people that listen to this podcast, if you want to order a case of it, it's normally $65. But if you order a case or if you order the six pack, whatever it's sold in, and you use the phrase, because I said so, my last name, Cause, because I said so, you will get it $10 off. So instead of $65, you will get $55 when you order from Barrel Select. But you got to say, because Matt said so. Because Matt said so. So, Stefan, I was wondering just a little bit about the process of the Chardonnay that you guys make.
So, a little bit about Vivier Wines. I'm from Burgundy, and I grew up with Chardonnay and Pinot Noir in my blood. And I grew up in a small wine village. My parents were teachers, so I'm first generation wine grower, winemaker. But Chardonnay was really part of my life. And when I moved here to California in 1999, I was 24, 25 years old. I worked a couple years at a winery in the Russian River Valley. Cool climate, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Zinfandel. And then in 2002, I was able to work with a winery in Napa called Hyde and Devillaine. Hyde Devillaine is a family partnership between the Hyde vineyards of Carneros, Napa Valley, and Aubert Devillaine and his wife, Pamela Devillaine of Burgundy. Aubert is a famous guy in the wine world. He owns a small winery called Domaine de la Romanée Conti in Vaughan Romanée. And so he's been my mentor the last 20 years here in California, and he probably makes one of the most heralded Chardonnay, the Montrachet, from Domaine de la Romanée Conti. So being the winemaker at Hyde Devillaine, my wife and I were allowed to start Vivier Wines in 2009. Of course, at the beginning, we didn't make any Chardonnay because Hyde Devillaine was making wine. And now at our 10 years birthday, 10 years anniversary, I must say.
Really?
We finally made our first Chardonnay at 2018 Sonoma Coast Chardonnay. So the fruit is Californian, the soul, the heart is Burgundian. So that's where I'm from. And so the wines have great tension, a lot of minerality. It has a lot of energy and brightness. It is made without too many manipulation. We don't rag the wine. We press very gently. We harvest at night by hand. And we being as respectful as possible to the site we're getting the fruit from. And the vineyard is about 25 years old. It's located in a small wine region called Petaluma Gap, and it's part of the Sonoma Coast. So we label the wine as Sonoma Coast. And it comes from a small vineyard called Flocchini. And Flocchini is a small vineyard that started in the 1980s by an Italian family, fifth generation, I believe, Italian family in Petaluma. They used to be cattle farmer and started in the wine grapes growing in the early 1980s. So it's a really cool site right by the Petaluma River. So we get a lot of fog in the morning. We get a lot of wind. It's really extremely windy out there. And the afternoon barely goes over in the low 80s, actually high 80s, low 90s in Fahrenheit, as I would say, like 25 to 28 Celsius. So it doesn't get screaming hot in the afternoon as some other part of California. So the Chardonnay out there, and we're going to talk about that for the Pinot Noir as well, but the Chardonnay is ripening extremely slowly. Aromas and flavors layering on top of each other day after day. And this long, long season going from May all the way to September, it takes about 100, 205 days between bloom and harvest. And this really long season allows us to have a very delicate wine, but also really deep and complex wine.
I want to talk a little bit about the Petaluma Gap and just how important that is for, you know, for someone like you who wants to try to make as cool climate as you can. It's, you know, it can be harder in California than in Burgundy, but we got to go back to Aubert de Vilaine. And I was wondering if you could tell the listeners, what, like, just for the listeners, he's the most famous Pinot producer on planet Earth. And that's not me being hyperbolic. So Stefan, I'm wondering what has he taught you? What are some of the things you've learned from such a master of Burgundy?
It's been an amazing adventure. And to your question, when I started at High de Vilaine, I was 24, 25 years old, was starting to work with a legend, Aubert de Vilaine, already. And what I learned really, really fast with Aubert is number one is to be patient and to take my time. And it's something that's really hard in not only in winemaking, but I think in life, when you're 24, 25, you want to use everything you learn during your school days, and you want to try this technique and try this other technique and be a little bit more technical that probably one should be. And so there was always a great mentor and teacher, in a sense of like taking a step back, looking at not only the wine but the vines. Are they balanced? Is any grapes touching another grape? Take your time, Stefan, with the wine. Maybe you should wait for a few weeks before, see what nature does before, you know, do some manipulation with the wine. And so that was a great learning. And two, he was great at, and he's really absolutely incredible at taking perspective on the wine industry. He has this incredible view from business through marketing, through vineyards and winemaking, and with all his experience and all his travel. And so listening to him always has been like a great journey to learn the wine business on the fast track. And number three, again, winemaking and life, wine growing and life are really, really mixed up. And he really taught me to be simple. And very early on, he told me, you know, Stefan, it's the most difficult in life is to be simple. And being simple in winemaking doesn't mean making simple wines, but being simple in winemaking is sometimes taking the time and trying to step on the side of the wine and look at the wine, not manipulating all the time, not taking your time with it is often the best answer with wine. So this was not only a great learning curve for a young winemaker, but at the same time for a young person, it's also great teachings.
That's true, because when you're young, you don't usually have as much patience. You always seem to be in a rush. Yeah, you're right. I read one thing about how, or let me just ask you like this. Tell me the benefits of being a lazy winemaker.
Well, this is totally linked to what I was just explaining. My wife is not here with me, but I don't think she considers me as a pretty lazy. But the lazy here is being able to stand on the side of the wine and being a little bit of a caregiver, a babysitter for the wine, a wine sitter, if I may. So you want to keep it. It's a little bit like raising kids. You want to give them a lot of freedom, but there is a frontier that they should not pass. And same thing with the wine. You want to give the wine freedom. Winemaking is a big manipulation. We have to. The results of wine growing is not wine. The results of wine growing is vinegar. So we have to stop it somewhere. And on this basis, you also want in your glass, you want in the Vivier 2018 Sonomaco Chardonnay, you don't want a picture of me. You want a picture of the vineyard. You want a picture of Petaluma Gap. You want a picture of Sonomacos. You want a picture of Flokini Vineyards. rather than a picture of Stéphane Vivier. So being lazy is like being standing aside of the wine process and making sure that there's only the minimum amount of manipulation to arrive to the best picture of the terroir, the best picture of the climat. We use the word climat in French, in Burgundy, to have in the glass the best expression of the land.
I like that answer. Also, the birds are so loud where you are.
Yeah, I'm outside in my backyard.
Yeah.
As I mentioned earlier today, it's soothing to be out here with a bird singing in those crazy times. It's good to be out here and talking to you.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you talking to me. So let's get into, and on this podcast, I love hearing people's stories and the journey, and then I mix it in with some little more hardcore wine stuff. The Petaluma Gap, I think, is a very important area for California wine because of the temperature. But I was wondering if you could sort of expand on that and why it's important for you and your philosophy.
Of course. So the Petaluma Gap is the newest Northern California wine sub-appellation AVA, American Viticultural Area. And it is because it has, it's a pretty small area. It goes maybe about 10 to 12 miles from south to north and about 5 to 8 miles east to west. And the Petaluma Gap is called Petaluma Gap because there is some kind of a channel. The winds are channeled from the Pacific Ocean directly into our vineyards, and we're about 15 miles from the ocean. Temperature shift is extremely important. We have very cold nights. The days are not as warm, but there's a huge thermal amplitude, thermal difference between night and day. So it allows us, I mentioned that a little bit earlier, it allows us to grow very slowly so that the sugar and the acid and the flavors, everything is maturing extremely slowly. Then we have this wind coming up, and the wind is rolling with in the afternoon. So the wind is extremely important because first it comes from the ocean, so it's a cold wind. You're not going to swim in Northern California. The water at its top, it's about 58 or 59 Celsius, so in Fahrenheit. So in Celsius, it will be like 15, 16. It's pretty cold, and so the wind is chilly. Then we have the amount of fog. The fog is really important for wine growing. So the fog rolls in Petaluma Gap, maybe at 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and then stay in our vineyards until about noon in the morning. We have this three-pronged thing: the wind, the fog, thermic, the temperature shift between night and day. These three components, and of course the soil we're going to talk about the geology and the soil, makes Petaluma Gap a very distinct, unique sub-region of Sonoma Coast.
Before we get into your Pinot Noir, I'm curious, did you have any skepticism about making the kind of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay that you would want to make? Did you have any skepticism about California when you first came here that you could achieve the sort of wines that you grew up loving to drink?
That's a great question. Yes, I arrived here with, of course, my Burgundian views, certainly some a lot of prejudice about what Northern California will be. And, Burgundy is pretty far from San Francisco. And we don't really know at the time, especially at the time, over 20 years ago now, we did not know very much about Russian River or Sonoma Coast or Carneros at the time in Burgundy. No, people are a lot I've traveled a lot more, and they appreciate the quality of the wine growing here. But yeah, when I arrived in 1999 and 2000, I scratched my head and said, like, oh man, it's always sunny here, and it's the life is so sweet, and people are so great. It might get a little boring. I'm not sure there's a vintage variation. And then on my first vintage in 1999, we harvested at the winery I was working at in the Russian River. We harvested our last Chardonnay on November 5th. And I said, this is really special to be having this like crazy long season. And the year after, we harvested that same block on October, first week of October, and it was really warm, and the backbone of the wine was really different. And I said, like, then let's go and learn more about all that. So I went to visit a lot of vineyards. I talked to a lot of older farmers in Russian River, Sonoma Coast, Carneros, and I learned that there are a lot of vintage variation here. There are a lot of different soil, and of course, it's hard to compare. We have a different viticulture, we have different climates, we have a different flora, a different fauna, and the people are different as well. So all this makes for like different terroir and different expression of Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, but. So the skepticism and the prejudices became interest and excitement about a wine region that was really young and really thriving, and with a lot of young people that were trying to still find the right place to plant Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. And we're like, after a long, long evening sharing glasses of wine and great food, always the same question was coming up. So like, do you think this region will be the next great region for us? And should we plant some Pinots there? And what about Chardonnay? And this is something that discussion that we stopped having in Burgundy a couple hundred years ago. So being part of something like that is was incredible.
So let's talk about your. And yeah, I mean, there is always going to be some sort of prejudice, I think. I mean, I think the reason is there's also in California, and we don't have to talk about specific producers, but there's a lot of Pinot Noir that hits 15 or higher percent alcohol and is big and full bodied. And I'm all for big, full bodied wines. I'm just not here for my Pinot Noir to be, you know, to taste like, you know, it's almost like a Cabernet.
Yeah, and and this is one of the characteristics of the Vivier wines, and also all the wines I make for my clients, and the wines I've been making for Haye de Vilaine as well, and one of the it brings me back to I remember, and I'm going to tell you a story about Aubert de Vilaine, another one where
yeah, like, do it.
Remember this story at the beginning of my journey with Aubert de Vilaine, and we were sitting at the table with Aubert, Pamela, and Larry Hyde and his wife, and we were at the beginning of Haye de Vilaine, and we were thinking about what kind of wine, you know, we were going to create. And so we opened a lot of wines, and Aubert told me, you know, Stefan, at this table they are a lot of wine that I think are only for sipping. But there's only a few wines here that are for drinking. And yeah. I think that he said, we want to make wine for drinking. And wine for drinking doesn't mean that it is simpler. Again, I think that in his mind, wine for drinking is that people enjoy it at the table, that wine over everything, wine is an ingredient. Wine needs to be at the table with your friend and with your family and be part of life. And this is the way in Burgundy. So at least if we can put our soul and our heart in California wines, we want to make wines that have tension, minerality, acidity, elegance, femininity. Wine that are balanced can be drunk, and we want to be the first wine empty at the table. And with that philosophy in mind, it continues with me, and I really think that actually in California, we have the potential to make this wine. We have the terroir to make this wine. The equation for Californian winemaker is opposite to the equation Burgundian winemaker have. In California, as I mentioned before, when I first arrived, it's the weather is really great. So it's really easy to wait. And for winemaker, it's easy to hang the fruit. And it's too easy because they get the fruit inside the winery, and then they're going to add some water and add some acidity, and they're going to in some way manipulate the wine, and in my mind, changing the expression of the land, changing the expression of the vineyard, back to having a picture of the vineyards in the glass and not a picture of the winemaker. And so that's why we make wines with less alcohol, but we worked hard to have them very complex, very dense, layered wine that are extremely easy to drink, but are also hard to describe, meaning that they're going to pair with a lot of different type of food and enjoyed for a long time with people at the table.
So let's talk about the Pinot Noir. It's the 2016. And again, I want to remind people, if you want to order this wine, you can get it through Barrel Select, the small, more artisanal wine consignment company here in Toronto. And if you order it and you say in your order, because Matt said so, this wine is normally $64 a bottle, but you'll get it for $54 for all of my listeners here on the podcast. So again, shout out to Don and Jeff from Barrel Select, and for you, Stefan, for doing this. I appreciate all three of you guys for the listeners. And again, it's because Matt said so. So let's talk about the 2016 Pinot Noir, also, of course, from Sonoma Coast. What would be the main things you want people to know about this wine?
Number one, our 2016 Sonoma Coast come from the same vineyards in the Petaluma Gap called Flokini, the Flokini vineyards. And been using best practices, and we're not using any herbicide and organic as much as possible, but we are not certified. And the wine is growing on a shallow clay in the Petaluma Gap, on a Gold Ridge series of clay. And it is very unique because they have planted there about almost 30 years ago. Now the vineyard is about 28 years old. They planted a selection of Pinot Noir from Burgundy that came from some famous vineyards in Vosne Romanée. The clusters are extremely small. The berries are very small as well. So there's an extreme concentration in this wine. But at the same time, the grapes are ripe at about 12.2, 12.5 degrees alcohol. So at really low sugar, you have a great characteristic and great density and depth in this wine already. And what I'm trying to do is to extract really to have this wine express three characters. I want the wine to have a quality of fruit, which is actually fairly easy in California because of the amount of sun we're getting. So fruit character is really easy in California, but what I really want in this wine is a quality of floral character. I want the violet and the rose petal and very delicate and feminine floral character. And at the same time, I want an earthiness into it, a spicy character into it. So we use a little bit of stem. I always have some stem inclusion in this wine. We add between 25 to 40% stem depending on the vintages. So the stem, the whole cluster, are coming to the bottom of the tank. and we destem the rest of the grapes on top of the whole cluster. And it makes for a wine that's lighter in body, but has a great definition, great precision, and has a very complex feel into it. It's a wine like the Chardonnay. Those two wines have a lot of texture into them. And that texture is designed for enjoyment at the table, but also designed to show the potential of these vineyards in Petaluma Gap.
Before we end this, I'm curious, you worked in Switzerland and New Zealand and obviously in France, but we'll go to Switzerland and New Zealand. I'm curious what you learned as what was influenced you as a winemaker working in those areas.
Well, Switzerland is a neighbor. I'm from Burgundy. Switzerland is only a couple hours drive. However, as a young Burgundian winemaker, I had no idea about the diversity of the winemaking and wine growing region in Switzerland. So this was absolutely amazing. And I went to Switzerland to do my final thesis on Pinot Noir tannins extraction. And so we had so much fun there. A great wine region that is very connected to science. So I was working off a college there, and the wine college, Oenology and Viticulture College in Canton de Vaud. Vaud is between Lausanne and Geneva, in a place called Changin. And I love the community and the energy of the winemaking in Switzerland. And just going like a couple of steps out of Burgundy in New Zealand, it gave me the itch to travel. And as my parents being not being in the wine industry, only in the wine drinking industry, it was a lot harder for me to get a fun, challenging walk in Burgundy because of the definition of Burgundy being small properties and family owned for generations. And so the combination of this and a Swiss guy I met at the time that was also working at studying at our university in Dijon, that guy had traveled to New Zealand and he opened a lot of New Zealand wines for us, Sauvignon Blanc, of course, but also Chardonnay and Pinot Noir that had a lot of unique character and were starting to be very interesting. And we're talking now about like it was in 1998, 1999, 2000. And I scratched my head. I used to play rugby. Of course, New Zealand is the best rugby player, has the best rugby players in the world. And so like, oh, they make wine there too. I didn't know. And so like, I would be great to visit and to see what they're doing and learn English. So when I decided that New Zealand was maybe a destination, it was already the summer in Burgundy, so I could not do harvest right away. And anyway, I didn't have the money to go to New Zealand. Being a student, money was always a problem. And so I decided to go to California to make money to go to New Zealand. And that's what happened. I borrowed money to my parents, went to the Russian River, stayed for 6 months, made enough cash to go to reimburse my parents and go to New Zealand. And I stayed there in New Zealand, and I really wanted at the time to make my life there. I loved the people, I loved the winemaking. It was, again, a young wine region that had a lot of potential, and you could see it, you could test it. But being in New Zealand, after a few months there and working the vineyards and pruning in the vineyards, I found myself being homesick all the time and missing Burgundy. And at that same time, I had the opportunity to go back to California. And during my 6 months in California, I'd never been homesick. So explain that, you know. Even if New Zealand is an island, it's a big island, and I was feeling far away. And so I got the opportunity to come back here in California, and I loved it, and that's a little bit the path I took. But I learned at every one of my stops a lot. I'm really happy to be here and to have found California, where, you know, life is really sweet, and also find this young wine region that really, really started over after Prohibition in the 1950s. So it's a really young viticulture here, younger people, and now we're starting to see the second and third generation coming up, and it was really exciting to be part of that. That's why I'm here in California, married to a wonderful California lady, and have two kids, and my life is here. So I'm not saying that I'm not continuing to travel. Actually, I started some consulting in Japan on the North Island of Hokkaido. So that's really exciting. So I still travel, and I go back to Burgundy, of course, every year. And so travel was great. Travel was it's a great way to open your mind, to open your heart to new techniques and new people. And wine industry, and wine growing is a really, really small world. So you meet the same people all over the world. So it's a wonderful place to be.
I absolutely agree. As I let you go, Stefan, and I don't know if you can compare them to a region in Burgundy, but your 2016 Pinot Noir Sonoma Coast or the Vivier 2018 Chardonnay, do they remind you of any parts of Burgundy, or is it just, you know, it's such different, you know, environment that it's hard to compare?
To answer this question, which I'm pretty sure, Matt, you will understand, people are asking me a million times.
Yeah.
I will start to say that the wines we're making here in California are really unique. And again, my goal is to make California wines with a Burgundian soul, because that's my upbringing. That's where I grew up. And I want to put that in the wine. But then if I really had to compare, I would say the Chardonnay will be more of a Meursault driven type of wine. Mm-hmm. I love the new wave in Meursault, and wine that is a little bit more on the reductive side, with a lot of acidity and a nice but some floral character. Maybe like I will dream of a Meursault Genévrière or Meursault Perrière, of course. So that will be some good comparison here. And for the Pinot Noir, I love the more delicate village of Burgundy. I'm a big fan of the wines of Volnay and the wines of Chambolle-Musigny. And I would say that Sonoma Coast, the 2016, is more like a very delicate Chambolle or very delicate Volnay, a wine that is singing, is more ethereal, has lighter on its feet than you would say a Pommard or a Von Romane. So more of a gentle taste and fresh, extremely fresh wines.
I love it. That's a great answer. And yeah, I also like the fact that for you, it's about making California wines. I find a lot of New World producers always try to say their wines are Burgundian, when I'm like, no, your wine is Oregon or Sonoma or Ontario. You know, you can take a lot of lessons from Burgundy, but don't try to hide from who you are. So I like that answer.
Thank you. Yeah, for me, it's first being true to where you live and where the vineyards are, than about myself. I need to be. I like to say that's part of the lazy winemaking. Is I'm sometimes telling people like, I'd like to be a ghost. Don't talk about me. Talk about the wine. Talk about the vineyards. Talk about Petaluma Gap. About Flokini. About the complexity of the wine and the elegance, the brightness, the precision, rather than talking about me. And it's maybe a little bit the antithesis of of I will say, now I'm going to be a little controversial maybe, but I would say a region like Napa, where like a lot of the winemakers are like rock stars.
And yeah,
I really want to be like about the vineyards, about the land, and I think that I'm here to make people understand that we can make wine with more intricacies and maybe a little bit more Burgundian, if you may want to the comparison, wines that have more energy and very delicate wine. And I think that's the goal here, wines that are made for drinking and that come from that have a sense of place.
Hey, Stefan, I really appreciate you joining me. If people are in Sonoma, look out for the Vivier wines and, of course, the HDV wines as well, the Haie de Vilaine. And remember, these are wines you can get at Barrel Select. And if you use the phrase, because Matt said so, you can get $10 off the 2018 Chardonnay or the 2016 Pinot Noir, both from Sonoma Coast, both from Petaluma Gap grapes. Stefan, really appreciate you joining the show. Be safe, and I hope to see you in person sometime soon.
Same for you, Matt. And I was scheduled to visit Toronto last week. I was supposed to
be
there last week, and we had to cancel everything. And so it's not a cancellation. It's going to be a reschedule. So you're going to see me soon.
Love it. Thank you so much, my friend.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Matt. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.